Hello everyone, and welcome to Ask Margot, where we talk about the things that keep us stuck and endeavour to find answers to the sticky matters of life. I'm Margot Coatsworth, your host today. I'm a clinical hypnotherapist, a coach, a writer, and a seeker of the deep and meaningful. We like to invite you every episode to send any questions you have into us, either at admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz or to me under the contact tab at margotunlimited.com, Margot with a T. My platform in all of life really is about the power of the words we use and how the words we choose to use deliberately and intentionally can actually change our whole reality. I say to people, you are the genie. I also say, picture your genie sitting on your shoulder, listening to everything you say, like, I don't like, I wish I had, I always get, I'm stuck, this always happens to me, it's my mother's fault. If your genie is indeed listening to you, then those are not great instructions for him. And if you're saying them over and over, you can be sure he is getting that message of yours. Think about your subconscious mind like your genie. Your subconscious hears and observes everything, the things you're aware of and the things you're not. And everything that goes on in your life is laid down in your subconscious like a program that directs you. It directs your behavior and your responses. This is incredibly powerful knowledge, and the more control you have, the more management you have of your subconscious mind, the more control you have of your life and of what happens, what shows up, what resonates, and what is magnetized to you, if you like. Let's take that one step further. If you've grown up with no one ever telling you you were worth much or worth anything, or, God forbid, that you were worthless, that's an awful thing to have laid down in your subconscious mind because it will undermine you if, as a child, you took that on. The chances are that as an adult, it's still affecting you, holding you back, stopping you from stepping into everything that you're capable of. The subconscious mind can take quite a bit of sorting, but it can be reprogrammed and it can be overwritten by the way you speak to yourself. I call it the story you tell yourself and the one you tell about yourself. Complaining, resentment, and self-pity create a vibration of contradiction. When you dwell on what's missing, you affirm absence and magnetize more of that. The universe hears every feeling as a command. That's your genie. If you say nothing ever goes my way, that becomes the order you project. If you say, I am so grateful for the blessings I already have, the same energy mobilizes to fulfill that decree. Gratitude is not merely polite, it's creative. Each morning, the first thought you think sets the vibration of your day. When you wake with gratitude, you align yourself instantly with what you want. That single vibration opens channels that no amount of effort could achieve. Gratitude in the morning becomes a magnet. At night, giving thanks before sleep clears the mind of worry and charges the subconscious with creative power. Gratitude before you sleep sows seeds for tomorrow's prosperity of every kind, before the mind has a time to recall its troubles. I was talking to someone the other day about how we talk to ourselves. He said, when I get up in the morning, I say to myself, I can do anything. Can you feel the energy around that? Say it to yourself. Say it out loud. I can do anything. I thought, what a fantastic way to start the day. Just step over everything that looks like it might be an impediment to that and say, preferably in front of a mirror, I can do anything. That's the kind of conversation we need to be having with ourselves. That's the story we need to be telling to ourselves and about ourselves. Oh yes, well, I'm the girl who does anything. who can do anything just makes me smile thinking about it. And it puts us into a fully open and receptive mode. It sends you off into a day full of the potential for creating a life you want, which is really what we're all here for, to create a life we want. Whatever our focus is, whatever our aspirations are, whatever we feel our purpose might be, we're here to create the life we choose. That's kind of what this show is about, getting over the problems, finding answers, and then sorting out our subconscious, directing our conscious mind so we're speaking what we want and not what we don't want, and therefore attracting what we choose. On top of all of that, we have our amazing super conscious connection with our source, with the universe, with God, with who we really are, our higher selves. However you like to couch that, that's the thing that really makes sense of it all. I have a friend who says, oh, but they're just words. I do not agree. If you don't believe me, try an experiment. You will never know the creative power of your words unless you use them differently and see how that changes what shows up in your life. Do you know that the word abracadabra means, by my words, I create? So get out your magic wands, everybody, and start doing magic. There is one proviso here. It's very important that the feeling behind the words we use is like the power that projects them forward. You can say, I can do anything, but if your energy behind that is, I can't really, or I haven't been able to do it up till now, so why should I be able to do it going forward? Or I don't really think there's any power in the things I say, and that the energy behind the words makes any difference. But if you can try and get your feeling in behind the things you say, you will discover that, in fact, is where your control is. It's like words are the vehicle and your feeling is the engine. Your vehicle will go faster and get you to where you want to go quicker and more effectively if your engine is powered up. I do sincerely believe this is where our work in life is. It's not in the stuff we try to do on the outside. It's our inner work. It's on who we are, what we believe, and what we feel is true. So focus on the inner you, because that's where your potential lies. That's where your power lies. If I was given permission to speak freely, I would say this. Letting random words run your life makes you dumbo and lazy. It also just leaves you wide open to becoming a victim and to all the crummy stuff of life. Okay, let's get on with our first question for today. It comes from Claire, who writes, Margot, I'm dating again after years of being out of the scene, and I find the language people use around it just awful. Words like hit on or dumped, everything sounds so aggressive or humiliating. Has romance really become this disrespectful? Hi, Claire. Well, the words we use around love have become careless, almost combative. When you hear phrases like, he hit on me, or she dumped me, you can feel the sting in them. It's as if attraction has become a threat and endings have become insults, or worse still, battlefields. But language shapes how we experience life. When we downgrade the words, we downgrade the experience. Let's start with, he hit on me. I've always found that phrase most displeasing because it's not a word used to describe an act of interest. To hit on someone is totally negative. It's one of not being approached with warmth or curiosity, and yet we've normalized it. We say it casually, as though to be found attractive is somehow offensive. Well, that's ridiculous. Isn't being noticed one of the beautiful parts of being alive? To have someone see you, to appreciate you, to want to know you, even if you're not interested, is not an insult, it's a compliment. It's life-affirming. The truth is, most of us want to be seen. We want to be seen as attractive to others. So when someone approaches you, why not meet that moment with grace instead of cynicism? You don't have to reciprocate. You can simply say, "Thank you, that's kind of you, but I'm not available." That's clear, respectful, and dignified. A mature person will receive it, smile, and step away. If they don't receive it that way, you know immediately all you ever need to know about them. You've learned something valuable about their character, and it tells you the story faster than words ever could. Spend no more time there. It takes courage to approach someone in this world of screens and silence. Why would we mock the very quality, the initiative, that most people say they want in a partner? If you want someone to step up for you, let them start with making an approach. Now let's look at the other phrase, "I got dumped." That's one equally unfortunate. When you say you've been dumped, you're suggesting that you were something that someone threw away. It's shocking. And it's really true. What's actually happened is that two people recognized they weren't a fit. It might have been painful or abrupt, but calling it dumping erases any wisdom you might gain from the experience. I always say to people who are feeling left or brokenhearted, better now than later, as they obviously, clearly weren't the right person for you. Only when we're being especially foolish do we want someone who's not right for us. We have to do ourselves a favour and stop that nonsense. These experiences show us what we value, what we won't tolerate, what we still need to learn. So instead of saying "he dumped me," try "we weren't a match." You either both realise it at the same time or one realises it before the other. But that's just a detail. Love works when it's two-way. That's how it's designed. Both of you have to be on the same page, or else you're pushing your love like a rock up a hill. We haven't got any time for that. Let's make our statements to be ones of mutual respect. We get to choose how we perceive what happens to us in life. We get to choose how we treat each other. Language isn't decoration, it's direction. When you describe your life in words of dignity, you live with more dignity. When you speak in words of injury, you stay in that state. Your vocabulary becomes your vibration. So let's elevate it. Let's stop turning interest into offense and endings into shame for one or the other person. If someone approaches you, receive it as a compliment. If someone leaves, bless them as part of your growth. That just means you're allowing yourself to be open to something and someone better for you. Both those moments are signs that you're alive and participating in the great experiment of love and life. I know that'll help, Claire. We have random names today for our confidentiality, and I couldn't face finding names starting with the letter X, which is where we're up to, Xavier. Our next question is from Anna, who writes, "Margot, I notice in social settings that some people dominate completely. They interrupt, explain, fill every silence. It's exhausting. Why do they need to do that, and how can I deal with it gracefully?" Oh, yes. I know some of these people, Anna. They'll jump in before the last word leaves your mouth, finish your sentences, change the topic, and retell your story as their own. At first glance, that looks like confidence, but often it's not confidence at all. It could be caused by any number of things, from grandstanding to feeling they have more to offer than anyone else in the room. It could be self-absorption. It could be social anxiety. It could be that silence is uncomfortable for people who crave validation. And that's really what's happening. For the person who needs constant validation, silence feels like danger. They interpret it as disapproval, loss of control, or worst of all, invisibility. Let's look at what's going on beneath the surface. Psychologists call this social overcompensation. It often stems from insecure attachment, where love or approval in childhood depended on performance and not just presence. When that child grows up, they unconsciously believe that they must constantly earn connection. Talking becomes their proof of value. Neuroscience explains it beautifully. Every time someone dominates a conversation, their brain releases a small hit of dopamine, the same reward chemical triggered by likes, applause, or sugar. It gives a fleeting sense of importance, a micro-validation, but it fades quickly and they chase the next one and the next. That's why they fill every silence. The dopamine dip between sentences feels like falling. Meanwhile, the listener's brain is doing something else entirely. When someone speaks non-stop, the listener's mirror neurons, which help us to feel empathy and connection, begin to disengage. That's why you feel drained around overtalkers. Your nervous system literally stops syncing with theirs. Conversation becomes one-way traffic, and you instinctively withdraw. So how do we deal with that? First, don't compete for airtime. Your power is in your composure. The human nervous system co-regulates. That means if you stay calm, you unconsciously invite calm from others. You become the still point that steadies the room. Secondly, use compassionate interruption. You can say, "That's interesting. Can we pause so others can add in?" Or, "I'd love to come back to that, but let's hear from Sarah." It redirects gracefully without shaming anyone. I read something recently that made me smile a lot. It said, "I'm sorry I slapped you, but I thought you'd never stop talking and I panicked." I just love that. I expect now I'm supposed to say something touchy-feely, but I don't want to really. If you're a guilty, non-stop talker and conversation dominator, just stop it. It's not all about you. Conversation is an interchange. It is not a stage for you to lecture upon. Give it up and read the room. So that's the answer to that annoying problem, Anna. Politely interject and move the focus. Our next question is from Joe, and it's about forgiveness. He says, "Who cares if I forgive or not? I don't really want to sometimes." I do think sometimes we don't think we have to forgive, or we don't think forgiveness is justified. Or we can see a terrible thing that's been done and we cannot possibly see how that can warrant forgiveness. But it's part of the law of life, of reciprocity, of in and out, up and down, sowing and reaping, the law of return, if you like. It's like someone who never gives can't really be given to. If you don't forgive, you can also expect not to be forgiven. The thing about forgiveness is if you don't forgive or won't, then the essence of that, the energy of unforgiveness, sits with you. And I actually think it shows up in your health, in your body, and also in your relationships. In my training as an RTT therapist, we were kind of directed to forgive if we wanted to. But if you don't forgive, it sits with you. It's a block in your life. I see it like a fur ball for a cat. That fur ball is there in their system, and they need to cough it up. They need to get rid of it because it's blocking the flow of their breathing and swallowing, which is their flow of life, really. So it's necessary to cough that fur ball up, and you really only want to get rid of it once. You don't want to be coughing up a fur ball every day or choking on it because you refuse to cough it up. Can you get the analogy I'm trying to make here? That you need to deal with these things to get rid of them, just like fur ball. You don't want to allow those irritants, those things, to be blocking you on an ongoing basis, because it doesn't do anyone harm except you. You're the one choking on it. I love how science actually backs that up. We used to treat forgiveness as purely a moral or spiritual thing, but research shows now that it has measurable effects on the body. When you hold on to resentment or anger, your body shifts into low-level flight or fight state. That means you either want to smack them, figuratively, or run away. The stress hormones, cortisol and adrenaline, stay circulating. Your heart rate is up and your blood pressure rises. Your immune system begins to weaken. One study at Stanford found that people who practiced forgiveness showed lower levels of stress, anxiety, and depression, and even improvements in sleep and immune function. Harboring unforgiveness keeps the nervous system on alert, as if the threat was still happening right now. That's why you can think about an old hurt and feel it as a tightness in the chest or stomach. The body literally relives the injury. It can contribute to inflammation, headaches, chronic fatigue, and even digestive issues. So when we talk about forgiveness, we're not only talking about peace of mind, we're talking about cellular health. Your cells listen to your thoughts. When you forgive, the body finally stands down. The nervous system returns to rest and healing becomes possible. Forgiveness doesn't mean agreement or denial. It means deciding you don't want that old story burning through your chemistry anymore. You release it because you love your life too much to keep on carrying the poison. So here's the process again. Name the wound. The body can only release what the mind acknowledges. Recognize the lesson. Ask, what did I learn from this? It may be just never to have that person in your life again. Set yourself free. You can forgive quietly. No announcement is required. And let it be final. This is important. Once you've coughed up that fur ball, don't keep playing with it. Forgiveness is emotional detox. It clears the system so that energy, blood, and joy can circulate freely. It frees you in the simplest form of self-healing. And it's the most profound act of personal sovereignty. So if something is sitting heavily on you, perhaps this is the day to cough it up. Once, properly, and forever. Then you can breathe again freely. You can do it, Joe. Cough up that fur ball. You'll feel great after you do so. So our last question today came from a listener who said, what are the biggest turnoffs for women? Let's talk about a few of the most common ones. Poor personal hygiene is at the top of the list, it seems. Dirty hands, long nails are creepy, except if you play guitar. Bad breath, unkempt nails, body odour, unclipped nails. You can see I have a thing about nails. They say, I don't care. Clean hands and fresh breath and teeth don't just make a good impression. They communicate self-respect, self-care. And that's always attractive. The next is aggressiveness. Being assertive can be admirable, but being overly forceful, argumentative, or dominating is something else entirely. It doesn't say confidence, it says, I need control. And women appreciate a man who's calm, composed, and respectful. Someone who has nothing to prove and doesn't need to dominate the conversation. Previous point already made. Then there's lack of empathy or listening. And this one runs deep. When a woman speaks and isn't really heard, she doesn't just feel ignored, she feels unseen. Empathy is the invisible glue in every meaningful connection. It's what tells us we matter. It's what tells us we're seen. And without that, attraction fades faster than a ferret up a drainpipe. Another one. Self-centeredness. When a man is too focused on himself, on his needs, his stories, his past, his goals, there is no space left for partnership. A relationship is made of two people, not one running commentary and in control. The most magnetic people are those who are genuinely interested, not just interesting. Closely linked to that is possessiveness. Let's be clear, most women don't find possessive behavior cute. It doesn't read as love, it reads as fear and control. Real affection gives space, it allows freedom. It says, I want you to be fully yourself and I trust that you choose to be here. That kind of security is infinitely more compelling than control ever could be. And finally, insecurity. the quiet saboteur of so many connections, one of the greatest turnoffs for women is a man who doubts himself. Confidence doesn't mean arrogance. It's that quiet steadiness that says, I know who I am and I'm comfortable with it. When a man holds that energy, it draws people in naturally. When he doesn't, the need for reassurance pushes them away. So how do we sum it up? Being mindful of these traits, hygiene, calmness, empathy, awareness, balance, and confidence. Men can foster relationships that feel healthy, mutual, and that last if they pay attention to these things. I'd like to add one more thing, which is, just from me, watch how a man eats, because you need to realize that you will be watching that for the rest of your life. The only thing I have ever memorized from a movie was from Miss Congeniality, where her mentor, Michael Caine, says to Sandra Bullock's character over a meal that he couldn't understand a word she was saying because, and I quote, he was mesmerized by the half-masticated cow rolling around in her wide-open trap. Well, on that charming note, we'll finish today. Thank you for joining me, and I know that some of these tips and tricks will be of help to you as you navigate the adventures of your coming week. And remember, you can do anything. Here's our slightly more elevated message from the universe today. We call it the word. I asked just this last week about how do we know when we're going down a wrong path. So my question was, how does one not go down an erroneous path? This is the answer I got. The same way you go down the right path, smiley face. You make sure you are aligned. You look to me as your guide, and you follow my leads. Till next time, bye-bye.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.